For those of us still here today, let me invite you to turn to Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19. We're still working our way through what are considered to be the most significant teachings of Jesus. What is still the Sermon on the Mount? What is still an invitation, inviting us to this whole other way of doing life and relationships? Noting most recently, we have been following Jesus through what are the three great pillars. Again, almsgiving, prayer, and fasting. Again, not if, but when you give, when you pray, when you fast. What are practices that really shape the heart? Disciplines that form the inner life. And now there is a bit of a shift moving from, we could say, the inner life of devotion to the outer life of direction. Beginning here at verse 19, and it runs through to the end of chapter 7. And so kind of a mini-series, if you will, these expressions of faith that are to be lived out, practiced in the way we do life. And just what is this first practice we are called to live out? I'm glad you asked. From Matthew 6 and 19, I have something to say about that, and so does Jesus. From Matthew 6 and 19, Matthew writes, we read, Jesus teaches, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So Jesus, he opens up here with, do not store up for yourselves. Noting the store up here comes from the Greek thesaurizo. It's preceded by the negative. But even more, when parsed here, it is in the present imperative, meaning this whole kind of storing up thing is already occurring. Jesus, he's not calling them out for something they might do someday in the future, but rather he's saying stop. It's you're doing it, right? So stop doing that thing you are already doing. So do not store up, but you're already doing it. So really a translation here, stop doing that thing you are already doing. And exactly what are we to stop doing? Stop, he says, storing up for yourselves treasures on earth. From Thesaurus, and in the first century, Thesaurus referred to accumulated wealth, mostly in the form of coins or jewels, precious metals, gold, silver. And so in a word, we can think of those things that have or that hold value. Keeping in mind, in the ancient world, there were no banks, at least certainly not in the way we think of them today. There were no mutual funds, IRAs, 401ks, that whole idea of investing with an expectation of any kind of steady return was nearly unheard of. And so think of stuff not as invested, not multiplied, but as stored. And your treasure really was what you could hold or hide or guard. And so the predominant choice was to bury your thesaurus in the ground. It was considered a way to keep it safe, a better way to keep it safe. In addition, a person's wealth was often found to include fine and elaborate clothing. From Joshua 7 and 21, we get this. When I, meaning Achan from the tribe of Judah, when I saw in the plunder a beautiful robe from Babylonia, 200 shekels of silver, so we get these precious metals, and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, I coveted them and took them. And then notice this, they are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. And so in today's language, we can think here of things with monetary value, right? Our material possessions. And it's into that reality Jesus is speaking. And Jesus speaking into that, he says, stop storing up for yourselves treasures on earth, right? All the stuff, possessions, money, things that we hold of value, he says, where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. And so So Jesus lays this out, and we all know what a moth can do to your clothing, right? And pretty soon you're saying, holy, 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 not because you are deeply spiritual, but because it's full of holes. And what was valuable is no more. It's in the words of our teaching this morning, Jesus says it is destroyed, what is quite literally, as in making something disappear, to completely vanish. In other words, it's gone, right? It's no more. The worth and the value completely vanish. But not only moths, the text also says vermin from the Greek brosis, and what means eating away or consuming. From the author and scholar William Barclay, he writes, in the Middle East, wealth often consisted in the corn and the grain that was stored away in great barns. But into that corn and grain, there would come worms, rats, and mice until the store was polluted and destroyed. In all probability, the reference is to the way in which those and other vermin could get into a granary and eat away the grain. And so, yes, we have moths and we have vermin, but also Jesus says, where thieves break in and steal, that verb break in comes from diaruso, and it refers to digging through or breaking through, as in the walls. And so Jesus, again, he steps into that reality. He says, stop storing up for yourselves all this stuff, right? Money, possessions, things of value that we deem of value here on earth. Stop storing up for yourselves, right, where it can be here today and gone tomorrow. But instead, Jesus says, store up for yourselves treasures, again, that which holds value, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy. And so it's all the same kind of language, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where, Jesus says, your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so, point being here, and this is what we need to get, point being, this is not about location, be it earth or heaven. This is about orientation. In a sense, this is about the direction of your life and mine. And it is orientation Jesus now presses home, keeps that conversation going, that same idea down to verse 22. The eye, he says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Now, to get underneath this and to make sense of it, understand Jesus, he is using an idiom. It's a figure of speech that would have been well known to those in Jewish circles, where the eye is shorthand for how you relate to others. The eye is shorthand for how you relate to others, specifically with your stuff, your things, your possessions, with your, we could say your coin and your clothing, your valuables, right? Your treasures. And so in Jesus' day, if you owned stuff, if you had stuff, you had resources, whatever coins and all that. And with that, you were generous. If you would share, give to those in need. As we might say today, if you were open-handed, then it would be said of you that you had a good eye. Or as it says here in the NIV, a healthy eye. I don't think that's the best translation. But it would be said that you had a good eye. And if you owned stuff, again, you had resources, coins, and all that. And with that, you were not generous. Right? You didn't share. So we might say today, you were tight-fisted. Then it would be said of you that you had an evil eye. We read the same idea from Proverbs 22 and verse 9. Those, it says, who are generous, noting in Hebrew, it's tov ayin, literally a good eye. They are blessed for, and here it is, for they share their food with the poor. And so again, those who have a good eye, right? Generous, give to those in need, share their food with the poor. And then from Matthew 20 and 15, Jesus is speaking a parable, a landowner who is paying all his workers the same, no matter how long they actually work. In verse 15, the landowner says to the ones complaining, am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious? Ayin Ra in Hebrew, ophthalmos, we could think of ophthalmology, ophthalmos su poneros in Greek, Either way, or in Hebrew, it's your evil eye. And he says, because I have a good eye. It is said in Jewish circles, even today, when people are raising money, you will hear, please give with a good eye. Please give with a good eye, which then leads to picking it up now, verse 24. Verse 24, we read, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Right? You cannot serve, in context here, both treasures on earth and treasures in heaven. And so by way of example, if you had $10 in hand, you cannot serve both God and you cannot be both open-handed and tight-fisted. Now, one more thing, and we will wrap this up for today. I want to turn back once more to treasures in heaven, because the ancient Jewish people were very familiar with this phrase, a belief not lost on the early church. And as the story goes, it was in the days of the terrible Decian persecution in Rome, when the Roman authorities broke into a Christian church. They were there to gather and take all the treasures, which they believed the church to possess. And so with that, the Roman prefect demanded from the church deacon, Laurentius, he demanded, show me your treasures at once. To which Laurentius, he paused, looked around the room, and pointing first to the widows and orphans who were being fed, and then to the sick being nursed, and to the poor whose needs were being supplied, these, he said, are the treasures of the church. It's the same idea from 1 Timothy, and we'll close with this. 1 Timothy, and then we'll have some time for sitting in the stillness together. But 1 Timothy chapter 6 and down to verse 17, command those, he writes, command those who are rich in this present world, and so we can think treasures on earth, right? Not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them, he goes on, command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds. Right? Think treasures in heaven, and to be generous and willing to share, right? A good eye. And then verse 19, in this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves, interesting, as a firm foundation for the coming age, right? Again, treasures in heaven, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. A life, Jesus says, oriented not toward treasures on earth, right? Doing life with, we could say, an evil eye, hiding your stuff, tight-fisted, right? Unwilling to share. But a life, Jesus says, oriented toward treasure in heaven, right? A good eye, the way of generosity, to be rich in good deeds, open-handed, willing to share. And so the question for you and for me, it's simple, and yet I think it is searching. In effect, right, asking, what is the orientation of my life and yours? What is the orientation of my life, right? What direction am I heading? And we could ask it this way, and I think need to ask, right? Am I doing life with a good eye or an evil eye? Am I living open-handed or living tight-fisted? And then in light of this teaching, how then is God calling me to reorient my heart? And maybe that starts with right now and asking, who is God inviting me to treasure today? Who is God inviting me to treasure today, this week? With whom is God calling me to generously share? And with that then, what one act of generosity will I practice today, tomorrow, this week? What one act of generosity will I practice in the coming days? And if you need a place to do that, feel free to talk with Mary and get connected with our food share ministry. There will be lots going on, lots to do, especially this week. And so feel free to reach out to her. And so as we now enter into some time of open worship and just sitting together in silence, let me invite us to reflect, right? Again, who will I treasure? With whom will I share? What one act? For where your treasure is, Jesus says, there your heart will be also.